From Vermont Public Radio, this is The Frequency. I'm Henry Epp.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. It's Wednesday, June 24th. Today on the podcast, anti-hunger advocates criticized the federal government's food distribution program in Vermont.
It came together very quickly without the input of anti-hunger advocates or people who have experience doing mass feeding.
First, today's headlines.
The Vermont Senate approved a package of new policing reforms on Tuesday. They include an absolute ban on the use of chokeholds, expanded data collection requirements for police departments, and a new legal standard for when cops can use lethal force.
But some law enforcement officials are already asking the House of Representatives to revise the legislation. Senate lawmakers fast-tracked the package in response to anti-racism protests across Vermont in recent weeks. Supporters of the bills say the measures will improve police accountability and transparency.
The Department of Health has reported one new case of COVID-19. Two people are hospitalized with the disease. 927 people have recovered and 56 people have died. To date, almost 60,000 tests have been conducted in Vermont.
Springfield Hospital says it needs more time to put together a reorganization plan as it tries to emerge from bankruptcy. The hospital lost $9 million last year, and it was supposed to file a plan with the bankruptcy court by the end of this month. But this week, attorneys for the hospital asked for an additional 4 months. Interim CEO Mike Halstead originally said Springfield would have to partner with another hospital to survive. But now the hospital is trying to come up with a path forward that would keep it independent.
Since mid-May, a massive food distribution program assembled in a matter of days has put boxes of food into the hands of thousands of Vermonters. The effort is part of a $3 billion federal program designed to help support farmers and to get food into the hands of those who need it. The food box contract was just renewed for $8.5 million. But as John Dillon reports, questions persist about whether this is the best way to feed Vermonters in need.
The National Guard and its partners have perfected their work since the first chaotic free food event in Berlin in mid-May. On that day, 1,900 cars showed up at the local airport and jammed traffic for miles. Some left in frustration after waiting up to 6 hours. It's a different experience today for Kelly Conant of Milton. She got an assigned time online, and when she drove up to the distribution site at the Shelburne Museum, mask-wearing soldiers had the food in her minivan within minutes. The hard part, she says, was asking for help.
I grew up on a farm, where I always, worked and provided, and then to have to ask is hard because you always do so well for so long, and then something so fast just kind of hits you, and then it's you don't know what to do. But it's nice to know that everybody's like kind of coming together, and it's like you're not alone, and there's people that will help you if you ask.
Conant has kept her job at a store through the crisis, but she says her husband was laid off. The ample food box with about 25 pounds of fresh produce, cheese, milk, and pre-cooked chicken helps feed her family.
So definitely makes up that slack of what we're missing right now.
The Food Box Program, the formal name is the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, is a signature piece of the Trump administration's response to the COVID-19 crisis. It's had mixed success around the country, although in Vermont the only real logistical hang-up was that first day in Berlin. But anti-hunger experts say the food box program was designed to help farmers first and feed people second.
It came together very quickly without the input of anti-hunger advocates or people who have experience doing mass feeding like this is requiring.
Nicole Whalen is communications director for the Vermont Food Bank, the statewide nonprofit tapped to help with the food distribution.
Essentially, they issued a RFP for distributors throughout the country to bid on the opportunity to purchase, pack, and deliver food, produce, dairy, and meat for people in need.
That's where the Abbey Group, based in Franklin County, came in. The family-owned food service company started small 25 years ago with a restaurant in Sheldon and later some local contracts for school meals and corporate dining rooms, and now operates in 4 states. Nina Hansen, the company's senior vice president, says there was a fierce scramble at the beginning to meet the government's request for proposal.
I think we had 2.5 days, actually, to put in a bid and, talk to farmers, talk to dairies, try and get as much legwork done as we could and put in a bid, and we were awarded the contract. We were thrilled.
The initial contract for May through June was for $5.4 million. The lion's share went to the Abbey Group. The Abbey Group, in turn, worked with regional dairy processors and food wholesalers to source and assemble the boxes. Hansen says the federal money has helped the Abbey Group offset other losses from their restaurant and school business. And as the work scaled up, the company actually hired people to pack boxes of cheese. Hansen says they try to buy local as much as possible, except for the pre-cooked chicken, which comes from a Wisconsin company.
It helps our farmers out and is helping to develop a resilient local food system that, you know, if anything happened where we're cut off from Florida or Georgia or California, you know, Vermont can feed itself.
This program was designed for farmers and food distributors. It was not the design of the program and the reasons for it were not really about feeding people.
John Sales is CEO of the Vermont Food Bank. He says just think of all the handling, packing, loading, and unloading it takes to get all this stuff in one place.
Mass food distribution is logistically challenging. It's expensive. People get what they get. You know, you don't get to choose what's the right food. It's not culturally appropriate. It's not appropriate to medical conditions people may have.
Sales says the best way to feed people isn't some high-profile new initiative. It's the food stamp program that's been around since the 1960s, now known as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. In Vermont, recipients get a special debit card they use to buy the food of their choice. In March, about 70,000 people were enrolled and got $10.7 million in benefits.
We're really encouraging people to sign up for that. You know, that way you can access food without having to make plans on somebody else's schedule to show up in your car and have boxes of food put in the trunk.
Sales would like to see the federal government broaden SNAP's income eligibility standards. For a family of four, it's now about $3,900 a month, so more could get help during the economic crisis. Human Services Secretary Mike Smith agrees.
We need to get those in need onto sustainable programs, food assistance programs, SNAP or Three Squares as we call it in Vermont. We need to give those in need some dignity in how we distribute food to them.
Nicole Whalen of the Food Bank says the food box idea was kicking around the U.S. Department of Agriculture for a while as an alternative to food stamps. But it became reality in the early days of the COVID crisis, when the administration wanted to help farmers and food distributors.
And so this is essentially a bailout for those industries. It's product that needs to be purchased from farmers. It's giving money to businesses to do it. It really has left people who are actually struggling with hunger as an afterthought.
Back at the Shelburne Museum, National Guard team leader Dan Delorier says that after 6 weeks of experience, they've gotten pretty good at moving boxes.
I mean, we're really efficient with this. There's other states that are asking us what we're doing, you know, and how we're doing it.
Today, they'll hand out 830 sets of food, about two sets per car, assuming everybody who registered shows up. If there's any left, it's sent to the food bank.
We don't want to go back with any food at the end of the day, so we're trying to run the numbers, but we end up having to take some back. And then having to coordinate with that to have the other trucks come and take that away. It's been kind of challenging in that aspect.
Delorier was in Wilmington last week, the same area of the Deerfield Valley where he served in 2011 after Tropical Storm Irene. The difference now, he says, is that this disaster is slow rolling.
That was, you know, the hurricane came through initially to wash everything out. You kind of knew, you kind of could set up a timeline of where and when it was going to end, you know, but this one, you don't know when it's going to end. And depending on if a so-called second wave hits, you don't know.
The next round of the food box distribution will be in smaller, more regional sites like local food pantries to make it even easier for people in all parts of the state to access the free food. For VPR News, I'm John Dillon.
Erica Heilman contributed to that story.
Last week, a U.S. Supreme Court ruling kept the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program in place, at least for now. It allows people who were brought to the U.S. as children without documentation to live, work, and go to school in the U.S. without the threat of deportation. President Barack Obama created DACA in 2012. The Trump administration tried to end the program, but the Supreme Court ruled that the administration didn't give proper legal justification for ending it.
The Trump administration says it will go back and seek to end the program now, so that leaves uncertainty for people like Juan Conde. He's a medical student at UVM who's also a DACA recipient. And I actually talked to him about 2 years ago when DACA was in some limbo and in congressional negotiations over immigration. And so I was really curious to hear what he would say when he was on Vermont Edition yesterday to talk about this latest ruling. And so he spoke to Vermont Edition host Jane Lindholm, and she asked Conde how he's feeling about this ruling.
We always knew that DACA was a temporary solution. We always understood that it was up to Congress to be able to pass a more permanent solution. So just knowing that we have a little bit more time is a very wonderful feeling.
It is? Do you still feel like you have some stability to move forward with your future?
I will say that stability and certainty have never actually been provided to us.
Mm.
One of the things that I've told fellow DACA members when the administration was originally trying to take away the program is people were wondering, well, what should we do? Should we still try to apply? What is going on? And one of the things that I said was, look, we've always had this uncertainty, and that hasn't stopped us. Before DACA, we were actually in a worse place. We couldn't drive. We couldn't legally work. We were frustrated because a lot of times, despite our academic achievements, we weren't able to basically advance to professional programs. Now, we still have a little bit more protection. What we're going through, we're still in a better place than before. And before, when we basically were against the wall, we had little hope of anything changing, we still pulled through. We've always had to kind of struggle in the shadows.
Hmm.
So certainly it may not feel like it's good enough for a lot of people, but it's good enough to continue.
Juan, you didn't grow up in Vermont. I understand you were born in Mexico. You grew up in Texas. What brought you here?
Yes. Yeah, so my brother and I came to the U.S. When I was 9 years old. I grew up all my life in Texas. When we came in, we learned a new language. We learned to sing the Star Spangled Banner. We learned to call this our home. When I was doing my studies, actually my mother passed away from cancer. And when I was trying to decide on what I wanted to do with my life, I really wanted to be a physician. However, at that time, I couldn't even apply to any medical school program in the country. So I changed my goals into, rather than become a physician, to become a researcher to study cancer. And I got my master's. I obtained my doctorate in research with tobacco smokers in the genesis. And then DACA happened. So when I was finishing my doctorate, I still wanted to be a physician because I really wanted to be able to treat cancer patients. I always felt it's difficult losing a family member to the disease.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of wanted to have the training so that I will be able to help other people that were in similar situations. And I decided that, well, I know it's more schooling, I know it's a lot of more work, but I do want to be a physician. I want to be able to treat cancer patients. And I found that the University of Vermont to be a very good fit. I knew very little about Vermont. I'm from Texas, so I basically did not know what winter meant. But I came here, and it's been a wonderful experience.
And you're supposed to graduate in 2021 from medical school, is that right?
That is correct.
Juan, you look at the trajectory of your career and how much your mother's death has impacted what you want to do and the emotion in your voice when you think about her. And I just want to say I'm sorry about your mom. That's really difficult.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you talking with us today and wish you the best of luck in your studies and your future. Thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency. We had reporting today from John Dillon, Erica Heilman, Howard Weiss-Tisman, and Peter Hirschfeld. The Vermont Edition segment was produced by Matthew Smith.
Hey, come to our coffee hour tomorrow. Wait, what day is it? All right, yeah. Come to our coffee hour tomorrow. That's Thursday, June 25th at 10:30 in the morning. It's a virtual event. You can log on and see us do a Q&A with our colleague, Mary Angish, who hosts Weekend Edition here on VPR. You can find out more at vpr.org/events.
And if you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at thefrequency@vpr.org. And you can also follow us on Twitter at @thefrequencyvpr.
Our executive producer is Mark Davis, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Henry Epp.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. Talk to you tomorrow.